On today's episode, we're celebrating the trade deadline with a special live edition of the DFA podcast. Joining me today are a host of my favorite colleagues and writers at Baseball Prospectus, including Aaron Gleeman, Patrick Dubuque, Jeffrey Paternostro, Emma Baccellieri, Kate Morrison, and Craig Goldstein. It's the DFA podcast, trade deadline edition. Everyone, welcome to the first live episode of the DFA podcast. I'm your host, Brian Grosnick. We have no RJ today because, unfortunately, this is a big day and RJ is busy doing his work for CBS Sports, but Sean is with us as our producer. I am here, and we've got a host of really great guests, our first one being the minor league editor of Baseball Prospectus, Craig Goldstein. Craig, thank you so much for being a part of this, man.
Absolutely. Happy to help out.
So we're about an hour before the trade deadline, literally right before we went on with this show. We had the first kind of blockbuster of the day. We are seeing that Sonny Gray is going to the Yankees, and the return is, well,
I'm going to give it a woof.
I'm shocked by this. So the initial reports are that it's James Caprellian, Mateo and Fowler, those are the only three pieces going back to Oakland as part of this deal?
Well, yeah, what we've seen is Jeff Passan has had the only names going back to Oakland right now, and those are the three he's named. He didn't specifically say that's the entire deal. He said Gray to the Yankees, done, Fowler, Mateo, Caprellian coming back. I suppose something could be added to that, but it doesn't seem like it from the way he phrased the tweet.
So, wow. So I'm kind of surprised. I really expected that if a Sonny Gray deal was going to get done between the Yankees and the Athletics, I expected there to be a Florial or someone of that caliber, maybe even a Justice Sheffield going back the other way. The highlight of this one is, I don't know, Mateo at this point with Fowler being injured. I don't know if he really counts as the top line guy in this deal. What do you think, Craig?
Yeah, I think Caprellian probably is the biggest name. I think they're all probably kind of bunched together a little bit. And some of them are hard to figure out. All of them are hard to figure out. Mateo has had makeup issues that dogged him since last year. He was not good at high A this year before getting a promotion to double A, and that was he got the promotion basically because he fit the roster a little bit better, and he's hit at double A since then, which is great, but it's also a much smaller sample size, and it could be one of those things where he's hitting because he feels challenged again. Something like that. But at the same time, you've got Caprellian, who's had multiple arm injuries, is out for the remainder of this year. And Fowler, who had a significant and kind of gruesome knee injury in his first game. We never even got to see him bat, I don't believe, in his first game as a Yankee. So I think you can say it's high risk, high reward, and it is high reward when you get three players with those ultimate ceilings, but the likelihood of hitting those ceilings are just are really pretty low. And as we're learning right now, the Yankees are also getting $1.5 million in international bonus money. So that deal just looks even better for the Yankees at this point.
Yeah, I'm very impressed by Brian Cashman. The guy knows how to make the right deal, and I'm getting less and less impressed by Billy Beane and the kind of the brain trust in Oakland right now, which is, this is a weird thing to say. Like, Brian from 10 years ago would be shocked that he's saying these things right now, but here we are. I like Fowler. I might like Fowler more than the average know-nothing analyst that doesn't specialize in prospects, just because the minor league numbers were so kind of compelling, and he's the type of guy who, definitely has that kind of 20-20 potential, but not being somebody who is at all qualified to talk about a guy like Dustin Fowler probably diminishes that kind of enthusiasm that anybody on the Athletic side should have. It is kind of weird, right, that the Athletics targeted almost exclusively injured players in this deal, because the Athletics have had such bad luck with their big trades in the past. I would have kind of hoped that from their perspective that they would be getting someone with a little more probability. But then again, you know, I guess in the Josh Donaldson trade, they did go after higher probability guys with lower ceilings, and we kind of see how that worked out, and that wasn't too good either, right?
Yeah, and I mean, to build on that, the guy that was probably the highest risk but and highest reward was Franklin Barreto, who's finally breaking in to the majors now and is still kind of the most appetizing aspect of that trade, right? I mean,
yeah,
Sean Nolan has fallen off the radar, and Graveman has shown flashes, but he's also – those flashes have been kind of a different guy than the one they acquired. Now, whether they acquired him with the intent to change him and they thought he could add a few miles per hour like he did at the beginning of the season, something like that, you know, that's hard for us to know from the outside. But, yeah, I think, again, you can argue the upside and the ceiling with those three – with these three guys, Fowler, Caprellian, and Mateo, but – there's not only a lot of variance, it's really hard to imagine that any of these guys hit their ceiling. And like you said, I like Fowler a lot. I think he was generally underrated, but the injury really throws a wrench into that kind of, he was probably the probability guy, right? But now,
right. Now
that's gone.
It's fun because Jeff Passan just tweeted something like, Dustin Fowler is a big favorite among scouts. A lot, including some in the Yankees organization, liked him better than Clint Frazier. Maybe they liked him personally better than Clint Frazier. I would be kind of shocked to think that a lot of talent evaluators would be more inclined to pick Fowler over Frazier in terms of like performance and potential. But
you know, I think that goes a long way with scouts. Scouts really prefer up the middle players, and Frazier is less of a center fielder than Fowler is. And Fowler is also just, you know, I think he's kind of one of those blue collar guys with athleticism, and scouts tend to like those types.
Yeah, for sure. So I'm just looking at it now, and so we're seeing that the Yankees get to keep Torres, they get to keep Frazier, they get to keep Justice Sheffield. They obviously keep Aaron Judge and Gary Sanchez and
Esteban Florial. I mean, they keep that low, the lower minors, high end talent as well.
I mean, I'm starting to be concerned now. Like that, when you think like, okay, and then they'll go out and pay whatever they need to pay to get Bryce Harper in a couple of years. Like I'm concerned now about the rest of the American League East.
You talk about Harper, but Ohtani is probably the closer name out there, and they just got $1.5 million in international bonus money to pursue him.
Yeah, that's disturbing. I'm not sure what to make of this. So
and they just got bonus money from the Orioles. They traded, I think, Yeffrey Ramirez for bonus money from the Orioles. So, you know, they are adding on that front. We don't know if it's for Ohtani. It doesn't really matter who it's for specifically, but it just means they can go out and get more, more talent to backfill all of these guys. You know, this Mateo was obviously signed with international bonus money. They can go try and find another one of those guys, even if it's not Ohtani. So,
mm-hmm. And I mean, obviously, if Ohtani winds up coming over, I mean, he would blow out whatever pool they would have, I would imagine. But if they don't go after Ohtani, then they've got more money to get, you know, more guys like Mateo, just like you're saying.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I don't want to I think this deal heavily favors the Yankees. I think Cashman did a great job. Now, again, you can talk about the prospects that the A's are getting back. Caprellian showed really like high-end front of the rotation stuff before he got hurt, and,
mm-hmm.
and that's not irrelevant, but
no.
Again, you're talking about a guy who's been injured multiple times, and he's been injured since part of the reason he showed that high-end stuff was a tick up in velocity or maybe even two ticks up in velocity from when he was drafted. And when those guys get injured, you just have concern whether they're going to be that guy when they come back. And if they're not that guy, then again, you're losing that upside to begin with. So it's just hard to figure out.
Well, we were originally, before the gray trade went through, going to talk about another, I guess we'll put it as an ace starting pitcher, because I guess by default, Hellickson was like the number one starter on the Phillies before this deal. And I don't know.
Well,
and like
Aaron,
some
Aaron
alternate...
Nola exists. I mean,
he's better, but I wouldn't consider if he was the one that they were looking at as their number one. And then now he moves to the Orioles, where I don't know, he might be their second best starter. That's kind of a weird deal, right?
This is a lot of damning with faint praise.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very weird deal. I'm not quite sure what the Orioles are doing. He certainly can eat innings, but he's also like the most Orioles pitcher.
Yeah.
Like he's the right-handed Wade Miley. And they have Wade Miley, and they, you know what I mean? Like it's, and I don't understand it, because the Orioles are far enough back in the race with enough teams to climb over that it doesn't make sense that they'd be buying, and they're
right.
not buying. We see they're shopping Zach Britton. They're, you know, they're shopping Brad Brock. Like there's a lot of stuff going on, that I don't understand why they would end up taking Hellickson back. Now, I don't think they really lost a ton. I think Garrett Clevenger is probably a reliever when it's all said and done. And Hyun-Soo Kim is not bad. He can really get on base, but Buck Showalter really never played him. He did not have an affinity for Kim. And so I think it balances some money. You know, they take some money off the books in that sense and balance whatever they're getting back in Hellickson. So that's fine, but it just didn't really make any sense. But it did. I wanted to ask you and Sean, you know, while I'm here, it inspired me to have a little quiz. What pitcher now who is not on the Orioles and has not been on the Orioles takes the mantle of most Orioles pitcher?
See, that's really challenging. Sean, let's bring you in and you can have first crack at it. And then I can sound really smart after you guess something. And I have some time to think about it.
Oh, you're so nice. Give me the first crack.
Please, Sean, come in and step right in front of this moving bus if you don't mind.
Right, really.
It's got to be a guy with like sterling medical records, right? Because he can't fail the physical. I don't know.
That eliminates one of the guys that I was going to say, because my first thought was the recently re-traded Jaime Garcia, but you're right. He probably has too much in the medical to have an issue. He can't throw a cutter, right? That's got to be a requirement. You're not allowed to throw a cutter if you pitch for the Orioles.
Right. And even guys, you know, if you want to think of – I would have said before this year, like Trevor Cahill fits the mold, but he's been kind of too good this year.
Yeah, that's a good one. That would have been a good one if he was not terrible. I'm just trying to think real quickly about who has like kind of a low strikeout rate, but a high homer rate, and like somebody who's, I mean, they obviously have to be bad.
I have an answer in mind, but I don't know if it's the most.
Okay. Give me who you got.
I think a guy like Ricky Nolasco.
Oh, Nolasco's good. Nolasco's very good.
Yeah. You know, like was good in the last 3 to 5 years, has dropped off, is adequate.
Yeah, no.
That's kind of the sweet spot.
He definitely does. I'm going to go with Jesse Chavez.
Ooh, I like that.
I think he could be a good one. He's very bad. And he gives up almost 2 homers per 9, so he's one. Sleeper candidate is after the shine wears off, we could go Julio Teheran if he continues to pitch as badly as he did this year.
Yeah, I mean, I'm often he's like the upside story for Kevin Gausman for me for many years, because he finally learned a breaking ball that he could use and it finally worked. So I could see him as like, you know, slotting in for Gausman when they finally give up on him.
So Andrew Kashner.
Oh, that's
a good one.
I like that.
And formerly touted, that's a really nice one. That, Sean, you've done well given the difficult situation I put you in. I think you might have had the best answer. He and Nolasco are probably the two best. Craig, we can't get to the Howie Kendrick trade to the Nationals because we've got to move on to our next guest.
No problem. That's probably
for the best. Yeah. So I really appreciate having you on. Do you want to plug anything real quickly before we let you go?
Just all the transaction analysis that we're going to have going at Baseball Prospectus. We're going to write up every move and have a take on every guy. So head to Baseball Prospectus. I believe pretty much all of it is free today. So if you don't have a subscription, you get an idea of what we're doing over there.
And let me tell you, the prospect team, the minor league team, their work on these transaction analysis has been phenomenal, especially you, Craig, and Jeff and the rest of the team. So, like, that's the real valuable stuff. We have some garbage write-ups from me on the major league guys, but everything about the minor league guys has been really great.
I appreciate it. All credit to the team. They're a really good group, and they really know their stuff. So we're happy we get to help out and provide a little context for these deals.
Well, thank you again. We will go ahead and we will move on now to our next guest. Sean, do we have our next guest available?
Are you with us now, Patrick?
I think it's time to slow things down a little bit.
Awesome. Joining us now is Patrick Dubuque of Baseball Prospectus. He is the curator and the brains and the heart behind Short Relief at Baseball Prospectus, one of my favorite writers, and secretly also not just a really great writer, but a very sharp analyst. Patrick, I'm so glad you could join us for this.
It was a really good secret. I didn't even know about it.
So we've got a couple of different things to talk about. There's some stuff happening right now. I think we've probably got to start things off with the joy that is bringing Erasmo Ramirez back to the Seattle Mariners. You're a Mariners guy. This was a happy homecoming for you, right?
Yeah, I really liked this trade. Not so much as a Mariners fan, but just because I like the symmetry of it. I think we get caught up so much in winners and losers and buyers and sellers, and those are our only dichotomies at the trade deadline, right? Unless you're the Orioles, and then you apparently are both. But with the Erasmo trade and the Rays trade, it's great because both ball clubs are pretty much in the exact same situation. They're both trading for the same position, but it's not a challenge trade. It's not one team thinking they've got the best of the other. It's just a different inequality on their roster.
Yeah,
you need to be filled with a different imbalance.
That is kind of a neat way of looking at it. I mean, Steve Cishek has not endeared himself to Mariners fans too much, I would say, over the last tenure that he's had there. But he does provide a different look out of the bullpen from some of the other guys that the Rays were getting, right?
Well, and I think he's a very solid reliever. I think that expectations when you're a closer are high, and all relief pitchers are essentially disappointments because they're always going to blow one game, and that's the only thing a fan will ever remember is the one game they blew. But Cishek is a fine eighth-inning guy. He shouldn't probably be trusted to close. He probably won't, and that's fine. He's good at solidifying that part of the bullpen. But that's a part of the bullpen that the Mariners actually have been fairly strong with, especially with Nick Vincent deciding that he's, you know, a sub-2 ERA pitcher this year. That was a position of strength, and the position of weakness that the Mariners had was the sixth and seventh innings,
right,
and getting to that end of the bullpen. So they gave up that maybe better eighth-inning pitcher for a more versatile pitcher on the other side.
And with the way that the Mariners' rotation has gone this year, which has pretty much been an unmitigated disaster, the fact that having somebody who can go multiple innings really does seem pretty valuable because you're spending a lot of time with Ariel Miranda and Giovanni Gallardo and some of these guys. As a Mariners fan, what do you feel like this season and the moves that DePoto's made up to this point, what is that done for you? Do you feel like the process was good and the results might not have been so good, or do you think that maybe just this isn't the way you would have wanted to see them go about their business in terms of the transactions?
I think, we want to talk about which transactions he made. I mean, we could be here all night.
Right.
the question is, like, I think it's like buying avocados in that You can't, I mean, when you buy the avocado, you're thinking of all the avocados you've ever eaten, and they're all great, and you're looking forward to that avocado, and you can't tell when you buy it whether that avocado is going to be okay or not. It looks okay. You do that little squeeze on it, and it doesn't really tell you anything. You start thinking maybe it was a little too soft. Maybe, you know, you start doubting yourself. And then it's not really till you get home, and then you find out, you open it up, and then it's the Chris Taylor trade. That was, if there is an avocado that I hated the most, that would be the avocado. But for the most part, I think that you look at most DePoto trades, and mostly when you look at them right away, they look okay. They look like they can make sense. You can at least get a thought process out of it, which is not something that the regime has had in previous years. But you just don't know. So like a trade like – a really minor trade like the Chris Heston trade. The Mariners picked up Heston for I don't even remember what, because he was essentially free from the Giants. Mm-hmm. Because the Giants had too many starting pitchers, and the Mariners knew they would need a sixth man. And that's who they decided to go with. They had five starters. They knew those five starters would not start all the time. You can basically do two things when you have that kind of situation. You can either have guys with options, or you can have guys you can stick in the sixth. And they decided to go the option route. They got Chris Heston, and Heston started one game for the Mariners, and he is not a Mariner anymore.
Right.
So
very much not.
Every single one of those lottery tickets, every one of those little pieces of insurance the Mariners got for themselves this year, just none of them worked. Let's see. I've got a list of players who started against the Mariners this year. That includes Ryan Weber, Chris Heston, Rob Whalen, Dylan Overton, Andrew Moore, Chase DeJong, Christian Bergman, Sam Gavigliano. The last three of those were actually starting together at the same time with Miranda and Gallardo. Ariel Miranda was once the number one team's rotation for a couple of weeks. You can't. Like, it's amazing that they're 500. It's crazy that they're still around. And, you know, like, basically, if you're gonna make 20 trades, two of them will be absolute duds. And you have to be kind of happy. You have to hope that it's like a relief pitcher. You hope that the 18 decent ones are good enough to compensate, and that you don't just fixate yourself with the blown save of trades.
Sure. That's I really love the avocado analogy. Unfortunately for me, like, I am the world's worst person at picking out avocados. When I go to the grocery store, whenever I get back, they're always either completely, it's like a block of wood, or it's just black on the inside. So I guess I might be like the Kevin Towers of avocado picking. So I'm going to carry that, or maybe the Jim Bowden, although, like, I don't think I've committed any crimes at the grocery store recently, but I think that analogy I'm going to take with me for a little while. I want to talk to you about another deal that was made recently with a former Mariner involved, so we can kind of use that as a cheap segue to the next one. And that's so recently there was a trade. The Astros acquired Francisco Liriano from the Blue Jays. Going back the other way is Teoscar Hernandez to the Blue Jays, an outfield prospect, and everyone's favorite former Mariner, Nori Aoki, going to the Blue Jays. So do you want to reflect a little bit on the Nori Aoki experience before talk a little bit about Liriano?
I'm probably one of the few Aoki proponents. I enjoy chaos, and there are a few people more chaotic in baseball than Nori Aoki. I love that not only does he not make sense, but he's never in a transaction that makes sense.
No.
Like, the Blue Jays don't really need him. And he's probably just there as a salary dump. But I think that he's one of those people who's just kind of perpetually underrated, because he has defensive value, but you can't possibly see that by looking at him.
Right.
Because
he's
every
an ugly defender.
Every route is like a Family Circus cartoon strip. a little Jeffy, you know, walking along the dotted line. That's a reference for all you kids out there.
Everyone under 20 is looking at us, like, scratching their heads and saying, well, we weren't listening to this podcast anyway, so it doesn't matter.
But yeah, like, Aoki deserves to be in baseball, and he doesn't probably deserve to be tossed around quite this badly, but, you know, he'll be on a new team bringing joy to new fans, perplexing new people. Think of it more as like a tour, and I think that the Norioki experience works really well.
Or a circus of some kind. It's his sixth team in 5 years, which is kind of crazy for a guy that up until this year was like above average value pretty much on the regular. And so it's just so strange to me. And then there was that weird signing with the Giants where the Giants got him for like, I don't know, maybe like a third of what people thought his value on the open market was.
Right. And they had probably his best semi season at that in the year for the Giants. It's weird. And then he was so consistent his first 4 years, and he went to the Mariners, and it was an ugly first half for Norioki.
You have to chuckle at that, because he was so consistent, and then he went to the Mariners is something that it's probably not the first time you've said that, I would have to imagine.
Probably not, no. I wish him all the best, though. I hope he gets a few hundred plate appearances before he moves on.
So do you have any,
whatever the next town is?
Oh yeah, I'm confident it won't be an East Coast team, but he's done a pretty good job of getting up and down the Midwest and the West Coast. So, you know, I'm hoping that he gets, you know, again, the circus goes to someplace else that's fun. Like, you know,
he feels like a Padre. He feels like a 2018 Padre.
Ooh, I didn't know you could be so mean. That's a very My poor Nori. I don't know, but you're right. It does feel like he would slot in very nicely next to Travis Jankowski and plenty
of
other
space in that outfield to roam too.
Literally and figuratively, I'm afraid. About Francisco Liriano, do you think that's a fun trade for the Astros? I hate to bring up the team that's beaten the Mariners so soundly for the much of this season, but the Astros picking up Liriano.
They're not even in their own. They're not even in the same division anymore. Like, I think they actually officially got changed to a fourth division, and the AL West doesn't get to have anybody in the playoffs. I'm pretty sure that's how it works now.
I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if that was the rule. But Liriano is being acquired to be a relief pitcher. That's kind of weird.
Yeah, and as long as it's not high leverage, I don't think I mind too much. I think the problem with Liriano is the problem of the day, which is that he's a fly ball pitcher, and you shouldn't do that. Now, you should never give up fly balls. And he has no control, and he's never had control. Like, even when he was great, he didn't have control. But you know, he's. You know, 40. What's his fly ball? And his ground ball rate is like in the low 40s. So, you just kind of have to. You know that if he's relieving, that he will give up. He'll give up a run every third inning or so that he pitches. And as long as you're not putting him in the eighth with a one run lead, there's enough to hope on there.
It's one of those
use of the magical relief powers that some people get.
And, I mean, there are worse places for him to slot in probably than Minute Maid Park. I mean, that's not the worst fit for him. Toronto might have been the worst fit for him. I don't know if that was that might be some benefit to the Astros. And the Astros do seem to like their guys who can run more than an inning or so in relief. So it does kind of seem like a logical fit. It's just I know that with the Astros playing so well and all the talk about them going after guys like Darvish or Gray or some of these other ones, if they end up with Francisco Liriano, it might not really be the most exciting thing Astros fans were working towards. But then again, I mean, there's probably only a few Astros fans left, so I guess it doesn't matter much.
I do like the idea of guys like Liriano getting traded a lot. Because I feel for people who are, especially pitchers, who basically are nailed down to their own reputations. And the more that Liriano gets traded, the less people will remember Francisco Liriano being something more than what he is now. And maybe Houston fans will be the ones that can come in and just say, okay, I think this guy can pitch 1.2 innings in the sixth or seventh and be happy with that, as opposed to what he seems like he's always never quite been since like 2010 or so.
Right. Yeah, that would be nice. If he could shake the specter of his couple of fabulous seasons with the Twins, I'm sure that will be very valuable to him once he is out of baseball. But while he's in baseball, he will only be frustrating for other right. fans of his. So, Patrick, we're going to move on. I can't thank you enough for joining and talking with us. Is there anything you want to plug before we move on and get to our next guest?
Well, just when the important baseball dies down, I encourage everyone to take a look at Short Relief. It is it's fun writing. It's fun to read, and hopefully it diverts you for a few minutes before the next important thing happens.
I tend to disagree. I think Short Relief is just as important as a lot of the other stuff that's posted on Baseball Prospectus and elsewhere, because I enjoy, and I think that the hashtag whimsy or whatever, you know, the emotive quality of Short Relief is a blessing to us, and it's a lot of fun. It's one of my favorite parts of the reading day. So thank you for doing that for all of us who like to read about baseball in lots of contexts, not just the performance context.
Well, thanks. You should write for it more often.
And moving on. No, I would love to. I just I have to write up all these garbage, you know.
Yeah, you're
minor
kind
trades.
Of busy. I know.
Emilio Bonifacio is going to the Diamondbacks. Who has time for brilliant, you know, short form writing? Thank you again, Patrick. I appreciate you.
Thanks, Brian.
So, Sean, we are we're ready to go with our next guest, I'm hoping.
Yep. Is that Jeffrey Paternostro? Are you there, Jeffrey?
I'm here.
Jeff, thank you so much for joining. Jeff, as any of our listeners know, is the senior prospect writer for Baseball Prospectus and the host of For All You Kids Out There, the BP Mets podcast, along with Jarrett Seidler. Jeff, I'm going to open this up with a choice to you. Do you want to talk about the players coming back to the Mets or going out from the Mets in these trades that they've made recently? Or are you just so sick of Mets prospects that you'd like to talk about anything else?
I mean, I assume I was on for my expertise in minor league relievers.
Oh, we can talk about some double A arms if you want.
Yeah, I'm sure we can.
But yeah, we've seen a couple of moves made since we've started recording. Let's start with the Addison Reed trade, I guess, because that's a big one. It happened just today. The Mets obviously trade Addison Reed to the Red Sox, and their return are three relief prospects, it looks like. And while your co-host Jarrett had some hot fire takes about how bad of a deal this was for the Mets.
He usually does.
Yeah, that is a little bit his stock in trade, but I appreciate that. You were a little bit more measured, and it seemed like you were, I won't say positive about the return, but not tearing the walls down about it. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
I mean, I think they should have beaten what they got. I don't think they were going to get, basically my Twitter ads and email inbox have been filled with Michael Chavez questions the last week, basically since Reed got linked to the Red Sox in the first place. I don't think that was ever all that realistic based on the return that like Pat Neshek brought back.
Right.
This is a slightly different version of that deal. We can quibble over, you know, whether Jose Gomez is the, you know, best player that went for either guy or not. It's possible. The Mets specifically have no right-handed relief depth in their upper minors. It's been an issue for a number of years. They've had to dip into the Atlantic League for the most part. Get guys like Cody Satterwhite, John Velasquez, Kyle Regno, Corey Burns this year. I've seen all these guys. You know, it's been a real issue in the Major League pen. They've had to sort of keep rolling out Neil Ramirez and Eric Goodell because their other AAA options, even the guys off the 40-man, aren't really options. Mm-hmm. And it was going to be an issue in 2018 for them, especially. And Alderson has said in the past he's not really comfortable giving long-term deals to free agent relievers. He's specifically spoken about not wanting to get into this class's free agent reliever crop, one of the reasons he made the trade for A.J. Ramos. So these guys are, if not immediately major league ready, guys that could move quickly in 2018 and be in the bullpen for them at some point that season.
So
I think that was sort of the line of thinking there.
And that line of thinking, when you explain it that way, it makes some sense. So I'm not totally opposed to this deal on any level. So Gerson Bautista, Jamie Callahan, who really seems to be maybe the closest of the three guys to Major League Ready, and Steven Nogosek, I believe is how you say that. Of the three of them, is there anything about any of the three of them that stands out the most to you?
I mean, Bautista's the guy with upside just because he can throw 100. They're all guys with plus fastballs, some feel for a secondary, and command issues, which is the kind of guy you see in most minor league bullpens.
Right.
Like you said, Callahan's probably the closest to Major League Ready, probably the best overall prospect, you know, the former second-round prep pick. Didn't really work out as a starter, has had some success in upper minors in the pen this year. You know, is he an impact relief arm in the majors? I mean, maybe relievers are weird, but I want to be clear. They didn't go out and get like a top-level relief pitching prospect in this deal. They did not get a guy with more than a 25% chance of, you know, being the next Addison Reed. Maybe not even a 50% chance of being a setup guy. They didn't go out, and get, let's say, I know he's hurt right now, but like Zach Birdie. They didn't go out and get that guy, that sort of elite reliever prospect. I mean, in so much as those guys don't even really exist anymore because it's people like Reynaldo Lopez and Michael Kopech, and obviously that wasn't happening.
Right.
So, but this was their best piece to deal at the deadline.
Mm-hmm.
Their best chance to sort of restock a farm system, you know, a soft sell, if you want to call it that, for a system that's extremely down right now for a variety of reasons, some graduation, some underperformance, some pitcher injuries. And they didn't
maybe
really bring back
Thomas DeBucky there.
Sure. They did, but they just didn't really bring back a guy that's going to make their top 10, probably not even their top 15. I haven't really dug into it yet. That's, you know, my project for September, October, November, December, January, and February. But, if it all comes together for Gerson Bautista, could he be a closer? Sure. But you can say that about any number of dudes that throw really hard in low minors bullpens.
Well, so one of the things that was kind of interesting about the Reed return was how it kind of dovetails with the AJ Ramos trade. When the Mets went out and traded Marandy Gonzalez and Ricardo Cespedes for AJ Ramos, the thought was that those guys might not make the 40 and might be subject to the Rule 5 draft. And I wasn't sure, but the return for Addison Reed seems like, I don't know, more guys who might have to be protected in the Rule 5, right?
Yeah, they have spots to give this offseason. They're going to have a lot of guys coming off the 40 as free agents. They don't have any significant adds from their actual minor league system. It's like Dom Smith and Luigi Orme, and then it was literally going to be whatever minor league relievers they wanted to add, and I assume both Bautista and Callahan will get added. You know, Callahan because he's close to Major League Ready, and Bautista because that's exactly the dude that goes 1-1 in the Rule 5 draft. He goes on.
Yeah.
But they are in a certain extent going to be swapping out the back end of that sort of 40-man reliever flotsam, whether it's Eric Goodell or Jason Bradford, Tyler Pill. So they have options. It's not going to be a huge roster crunch. I think they move Marandy Gonzalez because the Marlins really like Marandy Gonzalez from what I've been able to dig up.
Okay.
You know, fair enough. He's an interesting pitching prospect. He's buoyed a little bit by, again, the Mets system being down right now. You know, I think we had him 20 in preseason, and he's not really radically better as a pitcher than he was last year. On the one hand, he's, you know, pitched well in full season ball, which is a significant level jump. On the other hand, from what I've heard, the stuff's down a little bit, especially the fastball velocity. So you could argue they sold high on both Randy Gonzalez and Ricardo Cespedes, who was a high six-figure bonus guy. But you know, from my brief look in the Sally before he got hurt, I just don't really see much upside there. It's a corner bat without much bat at this point. He's only 19. You don't want to kill a guy, but you know, it's sort of a traditional upside flyer. They have other guys like that, you know, kicking around the low minors with that general profile. So I don't think it's a huge deal, but it is, like you said, they don't want to go into that reliever market. They don't want to go for a multi-year deal. So they're basically committing to AJ Ramos for 1 year at a little bit more than Addison Reed was making this year.
Right. And, you know, the Mets have a history with their 40-man roster of making some let's say, interesting decisions, like with Josh Edgen or with Eric Goodell, because they are major league ready, if not major league quality relievers, and they tend to want to stick with the guys they know, they wind up maybe being on the 40-man a little more often than we would like, and it leaves some spots being held for guys. But the way they use the 60-day DL at this point, I guess there will be plenty of spots for everybody on the 40-man at some point. So I do want to ask you quickly, the Sonny Gray trade came through, James Kaprielian, Dustin Fowler, and Luis Mateo all going back to the Athletics. Do you want to share any of your thoughts on the return that the Athletics are getting there, what these prospects could bring to the Athletics? We talked a little bit about this with Craig, and we got his take on it, but I'd love to hear yours on some of these guys too.
You know, you're never in the room. You never know exactly how these deals pan out. You never know exactly what a team's pref list is. Mm-hmm. You know, my pref list within the Yankee system, I don't think looks a lot like the A's pref list.
Yeah.
It's possible that Cashman just played hardball and would not part with either Esteban Florial or Chance Adams. But if that was the case, I don't see how the A's couldn't beat this deal at the winter meetings when there's going to be more teams in play for a long-term number two, number three type starter.
Mm-hmm. We saw that, you know, on the preseason Yankees top 10 list, Mateo was much higher than he would be now or even a couple of months into the year, I think, as Mateo was 3, I believe, and Kaprielian was 6 or something like that. And then it seems like not only has the team added more talent, but other guys have risen, while neither of them are considered the same level of top prospect that they might have been prior to the season, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you're treating a cost-controlled, I guess we can call him a top-of-the-rotation starter, certainly a guy that's been a top-of-the-rotation starter in the recent past, mm-hmm. you want somebody that's – so either you want a big upside play, which I think you know, like an Esteban Florial would count as, or if there's a guy that's risky or you know, an injury guy like Kaprielian or Fowler now in this case, you want to be – capturing some upside on the back end of that. And I don't know if that's there either. And barring those two things, you want somebody that's a sure shot major league regular. And
right.
I don't know. It's a lot of risk, and I don't know that you're getting commensurate upside for taking on that risk. Like, Dustin Fowler's a nice player. He had a really nice season in the upper minors this year. I've always liked him. I think he just missed our Yankees top 10, but he'd be a top 10 quality player in probably 28 other systems.
Right.
In baseball right now, maybe not the White Sox or the Braves. I haven't really, again, thought about it too hard yet. But he's more of like a low-risk, solid, regular, up-the-middle player, and he's a guy especially that most of his value is tied up in speed and center field defense, and that's a pretty big unknown right now after his sort of horrific knee injury. And it's the same issue with Kaprielian, who's thrown 29 professional innings in 3 seasons and looked very good doing it, but has absolutely no track record of staying healthy. And is going to be 24 next spring and probably won't throw a pitch until the end of that season.
Yeah.
So it's a weird deal. You just feel like there was some other outside pressure on the A's front office to make this move at the deadline. Because, again, I think if they held Gray over the winter meetings, they would have found a package that could have beaten this. Now, again, maybe they just really like these 3 players. Maybe they have really good reports on them. Maybe they're one of the teams that likes, I think it was Jeff Passan sent it out, that likes Fowler more than Clint Frazier. I don't know if I can get there, but
I did actually talk about that with Craig. I thought that was a little strong, but if, I mean, you know, again, that's why we have you on instead of just listening to my opinion on Clint Frazier, because that would be stupid, but yeah.
And
that
again,
was,
you
that,
can find – you can find scouts that'll say anything. You know, I sit with them 50, 60 days out of the year, and you hear lots of things. I heard a comp yesterday I definitely can't repeat, but it's actually slightly more aggressive than that one. But it's just, I don't know. Like, they're all 3 of these guys are going to be, I'll put it this way. All 3 of these guys are going to be in consideration for our top 101.
Mm-hmm.
The risk factor, especially with, you know, Kaprielian and Fowler, makes it sort of very tough to pinpoint a spot for them. But none of them were really in consideration for the top 50. I think even if they were healthy, that's probably the case. And you really do want that sort of, like, signature piece. Like, compared to what Jose Quintana brought back, I know there's some different things at work there, but I don't think they're wildly dissimilar profiles. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he brought back an impact, you know, potential impact talent, Eloy Jimenez. And I would say even probably a more interesting down ballot guy in Dylan Cease. So you'd like to at least match that if you're the A's.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, there's quite a big difference between a top 10 prospect like Jimenez is generally considered and a top, I don't know, 75 guy or a couple of top 75 guys in what the Yankees might have been giving up for Sonny Gray. So, Jeff, thank you so much for coming on. Is there anything you want to plug before we let you get back to the rest of the day and the craziness that's going on in the baseball world?
Yeah, we'll be doing our deadline special for all you kids out there tonight. Hopefully Jarrett will calm down a little bit by then, or else I'm just going to be like sitting there with my microphone on mute having a drink probably for 20-minute stretches.
That sounds great. That's a lot of fun. I really enjoy the show, so I hope some of our listeners who aren't already listening to For All You Kids Out There take a listen to that.
Beyond that, I think I've also gotten signed up to do a 2007 August and September retrospective for the Good Fight podcast. So that one I will definitely be drunk for, which should also be out sometime this week.
Well, that sounds great. Well, Jeff, thank you again for joining, and good luck with the rest of the your podcast commitments and the rest of the week, man.
And thanks for having me.
Sean, we're halfway home. We've made it through half of a show. I'm shocked. I'm a little scared about how the rest of this is going to go. We've got some deals coming in fast. Is our next guest lined up?
Yes. So, Emma, are you there?
I am.
So Emma, before we get started, there is a trade that just broke. Tony Watson to the Dodgers and David Hernandez to the Diamondbacks once again.
So, surprise. Thank you for joining, Emma. We really appreciate having you on. I guess Sean is bringing up some of these reliever trades, which are, you know, the most exciting part of the deadline, right? I mean, everybody loves when relievers get traded. We'll talk a little bit about both of those, but before we get into that, I did want to, as a known Indians fan, did want to get into some Indians adjacent moves at least a little bit.
Sure.
If that's all right with you, would that be all right?
Yeah, definitely.
So, the big move for the Indians so far has been Joe Smith.
Yes, the return.
Everybody loves a sidearming relief pitcher, and you know, again, we'll talk about some relief pitchers, I suppose. But Joe Smith comes back to the Indians in exchange for Tom Pannone and Samad Taylor. So, tell me your feelings on Joe Smith and what the Indians are doing at this point in the deadline and how their season's going.
Yeah, definitely. Well, obviously, it's a bullpen that's already really strong, but you know, it never hurts to add some more strength there. So this isn't something I'd say is particularly effective or going to have a huge impact, but it's also for a pretty small inconsequential cost, getting a little more depth, which obviously is something that, as Cleveland showed really well last year, can be hugely impactful down the stretch. One thing about Smith, I hadn't really been paying attention to him in Toronto at all this year. And, you know, as his name was circulating in rumors more this morning, I went to look at his numbers. And do you want to guess his K rate this year? Because I was floored by this. I had no idea.
I mean, I would guess, because he's Joe Smith, that it'd be something around like maybe 8/9, something like that.
That's what I would have guessed. But no, it is 12.9.
Man, that's wild. I wouldn't have expected that.
I saw it on BP and I was like, that seems like a glitch. I'm going to go to BRAF. And no, it's 12.9. So yeah, like admittedly, I haven't really watched him at all in Toronto this year. And it's like a pretty known quantity of sidearming relief help that's not hugely impactful. But yeah, he's definitely having a better year this year. And so that's, I guess, somewhat exciting that as far as like pretty insignificant on the whole relief pickups of the deadline go, that maybe there's a little more upside to picking up Joe Smith right now than I would have guessed just off the top of my head for that he would have gotten last year or whatever. So yeah. And the other thing I noticed here was that he's somehow only the second major league player named Joe Smith. I thought for sure there should have been a few more, but he's only the second. So those are your Joe Smith facts.
That's more than I think most people would have brought to the table had they, we just been like, hey, talk about Joe Smith for a couple of minutes. Like, you definitely beat the competition there. I have very little to talk about when it comes to Joe Smith other than the original trade that brought him over to the Indians. And I just want to talk a little bit with you about the Indians and the rumors around them for the deadline, because I was very surprised to hear the rumor mill churning out names like Yu Darvish and Sonny Gray and even Zach Britton, which to me was just mind-boggling that the Indians, a team that is pretty well set to win the AL Central, you talk about the Indians' bullpen and their rotation, which were so strong last year coming off the World Series, playoffs and injuries aside, with the rotation. But I mean, they've already got Andrew Miller and Cody Allen, and Cody Allen's been a little bit up and down this year, but they're known for really good back of the bullpen. They're known for some really quality high end starting pitchers. And then to hear them talking about, maybe they're going to make a move for Yu Darvish, maybe they're going to make a move for Zach Britton, that was very surprising to me. So what are your thoughts about that?
Yeah. So I was surprised to hear those circulating too, but not necessarily Ford, just because the rotation overall is really good, one of the best five in baseball, depending on which numbers you're using, but health has been a question mark there this year, that as it was last year, obviously in September and October, but this year it's been more of a concern at the first half, with Danny Salazar was out for about 6-7 weeks, I guess, and has only been back for about a week with a shoulder problem that's been iffy, Corey Kluber was out for, I guess, about a month with back problems. And then that also has, even though he's been fantastic when he's been here, has flared up a little too. Like, he had a start move back just last week from that flaring up again. Josh Tomlin just went on the DL today with a hamstring issue that shouldn't be a big deal, but, you never know. And so I just read that as the rumors. I mean, that, yes, it's a good rotation, it's a strong rotation that doesn't necessarily need help, but that, as you're looking to go back down the stretch, that, and especially with it, such a deep bullpen, obviously that makes it a little easier to weather gaps in the rotation if you're looking to being forced to go further into the rotation and call up guys who aren't going to be able to go as deep in games. But
sure,
that, it never hurts to not bank on pitcher's health and to give themselves a little extra depth there. So yeah, I was surprised by those, but looking at the picture of health they've had to deal with this year, it's not completely shocking.
Sure.
But yeah, as the day comes to a close and they haven't made any moves on that, that also was not surprising to me. So, yeah.
I think if something happens after you drop off and the Indians make one of those Darvish or Britton or other big deals, we will have to, I'm afraid, get back in touch with you later on to have you talk about that with us, because that would be too interesting not to talk to you again about that if it does end up happening. I do, when you talk about the situation in the rotation and how some of their pitchers have injury issues, listeners to the show, of which I believe there's at least four or five of them, may remember that I am the world's biggest Mike Clevinger fan. I am all in on Mike Clevinger. I'm sorry about that, because I feel like the more I get excited about Mike Clevinger, the worse he pitches. So I do want to formally apologize for that to anyone who's an Indians fan.
That's okay. We appreciate the support for him, and hopefully your curse lifts soon.
Okay, good, good. Instead of trying to point at one of the trades that's been made in the deadline and just be like, hey, surprise, I want you to talk about this trade, I kind of want to ask you about your views of the deadline up to this point, or if there are any deals that you've seen be made in the last day or week or whatever that you found particularly interesting or that you'd want to talk about or that just kind of caught your eye for one reason or another.
I mean, overall, I would say this deadline hasn't struck me as particularly surprising. I guess I'm trying I really, the most surprising time frame for me, which I'm sure you guys have already talked about, was that period on Friday night where it was Howie Kendrick, which seemed a little weird, then Jeremy Hellickson and AJ Ramos, like all within 1 hour.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like just such a weirdly condensed time frame of trades that all seemed a little strange. And then to have them all at once was like, this is a strange Friday night activity. Like, don't people have anything better to do than just shuffle their cards for all these minor moves? But
yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I guess as someone who's obviously has an eye on the AL Central, the Justin Wilson and Alex Avila wasn't super surprising. And, you know, I think that made sense for both sides.
Mm-hmm.
But that was when I, you know, was paying a little more attention to that. You know, it makes a lot of sense for the Cubs to be able to strengthen the back of their bullpen. And then, you know, for in terms of a backup catcher, they haven't really had anyone since getting rid of Miguel Montero. I guess they've been using, you know, Victor Caratini. So being able to add in Alex Avila and instead have a marginal upgrade there while strengthening your bullpen. Well, for the Tigers, getting, you know, two prospects that like Candelario would have had a tough road to a future in Chicago because, you know, corner infielders there are that seems like a future that the Cubs pretty much have set. So for them to be able to send away Candelario and now we'll get a chance in Detroit, that is something that I think makes sense for both sides. And Paredes, obviously pretty young, but has upside. So that was one that made sense for both sides, but one that as someone watching the AL Central, I paid a little more attention to. And other than that, I don't know.
The Candelario trade's a little bit interesting since you brought that up. I think because he was blocked for sure in the corners in Chicago, but it also kind of seems like he's blocked in Detroit because the Tigers already have Nick Castellanos at third base where he is truly awful defensively, but they don't really have a place to move him to. Like they're certainly not going to put him in the outfield because that would be even worse. And Miguel Cabrera, or the guy who looks like Miguel Cabrera but doesn't hit like him anymore, is playing first base. And they always seem to have, you know, Victor Martinez or somebody else playing DH. So it was kind of surprising to see them make that move. I don't want to knock the move because I think when you can get back talent, and Candelario is definitely talent, that's a good move. But does this kind of trade and the Tigers and what they're doing and the Royals and what they're doing, does it make you feel good about the Indians' chances in the next couple of years? Or are you starting to get worried seeing the Twins and the White Sox in the distance? How do you kind of feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, long-term, the White Sox are certainly really frightening that, you know, when you have that many top, like, elite prospects on one farm system, even if you're going to account for a good portion of those not reaching their ceilings, when there's still just such a critical mass of them, obviously that it seems hard to imagine that not having a pretty transformative impact on their future. Looking over the next couple of years. But in terms of more immediate, like, you know, next season, the season after, I think the fact, obviously, the Twins have slipped to the last 3 weeks and aren't really as much in the picture anymore for this year. But I think the fact that they kind of came out this season and seem to be hitting the marks that I think a lot of people thought were be possible for them next year, and were like a year ahead of schedule in that regard, that's certainly something that I think will be Cleveland will really have to keep an eye on for next year, the year after. I think I'm not necessarily concerned for Cleveland's future because that's the, you know, they're still a pretty young club.
Right.
And so I feel pretty confident in them at least having a pretty good chance to control the division over the next few years. But yeah, Minnesota for the immediate future is frightening. Or maybe not frightening, but something to keep an eye on. Chicago, talking a little bit longer term, that'll be interesting. And then I guess, I mean, Kansas City, I think, clear. Obviously, this year, it seems like they've been able to extend their window a little, but talking past next year, the year after, you know, that core is kind of reaching its end. And so that's not as much something that I'm watching. But yeah.
So we do have to move on to our next guest, but I want to thank you so much for coming on. You have an enormous amount of talent in writing, and you're also incredibly prolific. You're writing for a bunch of different outlets, and I don't want to miss one. So if you don't mind, can you go ahead and plug all of the different things that you're doing right now for us so that our listeners can find you if they're looking to read your writing and whatnot?
Yeah, sure. So I'm at Deadspin every night as the night editor and writer. I do the newsletter at Fangraphs twice a week, email newsletter, and of course I'm at Baseball Prospectus, mostly right now doing short relief once a week, Patrick Dubuque's little project. And yeah, other than that, in terms of things to plug, just BP will have excellent transaction analysis, I'm sure, for everything going on today, and so people should read that.
Not if I can help it. We will do moderate work at best, but I really do appreciate you joining us, and thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, definitely. Have a good one.
Sean, we have hit the deadline. We are there. We are at the trade deadline. Please tell me our next guest is with us and ready to go.
Kate, are you there?
Hello.
Kate, thank you so much. Right now joining us is Kate Morrison of Baseball Prospectus. Kate, thank you so much for joining. We've hit the trade deadline. I would love to hear your thoughts on a couple of different moves, but I wanted to open it up first and kind of ask you if you were seeing anything leading up to the deadline that you found particularly interesting and wanted to talk about.
I mean, honestly, it ended up being kind of a boring deadline. We had a bunch of rumors. You know, everybody thought that Darvish was going to be moved. A whole bunch of people thought that Verlander was going to be moved. And if those things had, you know, come to pass, that would have been really interesting. But the moves that we did have, I mean, Jeremy Jeffers back to the Brewers. Everybody knew Lucroy was on the way out the door if they could possibly move him.
Mm-hmm.
As far as Rangers are concerned, it was pretty anticlimactic.
Yeah, that's, your expertise is in a lot of areas, but especially the Rangers and especially in prospects, I wanted to kind of pick your brain a little bit because the Yu Darvish talk has been the big deal. And yes, we've hit the deadline. There's still the potential for us to hear something about Darvish being moved or some other trade being made. But I want to talk a little bit about him and whether or not you think that the Rangers – if, in fact, they did not trade Darvish, did they miss an opportunity here, or is he such a, you know, kind of a transcendent talent that, you know, maybe it's not the end of the world that they weren't able to deal him ahead of the deadline in his free agency?
I mean, I think that the way this front office probably looked at it was that they had an ask. It had to be worth basically what they would get if they did not re-sign Darvish, because if they hold Darvish and they offer him and they don't re-sign him, I believe that if they at least qualify him, then they get the compensation pick. So it has to be worth at least a compensation pick next year.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, there's been a lot of talk about how they would like to re-sign him. They really like him. They really like what he brings to the table. And they feel that this year is kind of an aberration. I mean, and if you go look at some of the advanced numbers, especially if you go look at DRA, right now Darvish's DRA is nearly a full run underneath what his ERA is. So it's easy to say, just kind of even from this outsider perspective, that what he's, you know, been dealing with right now is not necessarily going to be what he does going forward. And so, you know, I'm sure that they would have liked to move him. I'm sure that with the farm system being the way it is and still being kind of flat, it would have been nice if they could have done a little bit of rebuilding through moving Darvish.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's not the end of the world that they couldn't move him. I mean,
yeah.
Obviously, I think it's easy to say that they probably had some offers on the table. We kept hearing about rumors of offers, but those offers probably weren't worth, you know, moving him for.
And, you know, again, if you want to rebuild through Darvish, I think just what you said, well, you know, you're going to offer him the qualifying offer. You can rebuild a little bit with a compensation pick. So it's not like it's letting him walk for literally nothing.
Yeah.
We did talk to Jeff Paternoster a little bit about the return that the Yankees received for Sonny Gray and how that may not have been quite up to the quality that one might have expected for Sonny Gray, who was a long-term, more controllable starting pitcher, ace quality. But Gray also isn't like the kind of dynamic sort of talent, I don't think that Darvish is in a short term. So while a team might be acquiring more time with Gray and Darvish is a rental, even the Gray return didn't seem to be something that people were jumping head over heels over. So maybe that makes sense why the Rangers might not have moved on from Darvish if the market just wasn't there.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Gray move really showed. I mean, that was a moment I thought, you know, they're really just not going to move him. He's mm-hmm. here in Texas until the end of the year, at least, because that's. I mean, some of that's a question of his. I mean, just when you start making, you know, raising your eyebrows at kind of the return, because you can't think that was absolutely the best package that could have been on offer for Gray, especially since the A's ended up sending cap money back.
Right.
I mean, sometimes the team just loves a set of prospects and, you know, they're proven right and we're proven wrong or something, you know, in between. But I think that at that point with Gray setting the market so low, you know, yes, Darvish, you could argue that Darvish has kind of the more flashy, bright talent over the, you know, over Gray, but he is there for that shorter amount of time. And with Gray, you at least kind of know what you're going to get. With Darvish, he's been, you know, he's been a little up and down sometimes, and they both don't have, you know, stellar injury histories.
Right.
So, you know, I think that once that came down and that kind of set that market, that it was a lot less likely that either, you know, the rumored team was the Dodgers, that, you know, if it was the Dodgers weren't going to budge on, you know, anything above their kind of low level prospects, and the Rangers weren't going to really, you know, lower their own ask.
Mm-hmm. From a kind of a macro level, looking at the Rangers, so they made the deal for Jonathan Lucroy, which was for a player to be named later. So it's really kind of tough to break that one down, but it's more of an addition by subtraction thing, I would assume, in that case. And then there's the Jeremy Jeffress trade, and then there's the Darvish non-trade. From a macro level, how do you want to look at this deadline for the Rangers? Do you feel okay about where they're going headed into 2018? Do you think they have to do something this offseason to address kind of their slide a little bit from last year? Or how do you see things kind of going from here for the Rangers?
Well, 2017 has been just kind of a lot of bad luck for Texas. They made, you know, John Daniels made the right deal. He went out, he got that top-level catcher. The top-level catcher then aged. He went out and got those, you know, those relief pitchers. You know, one of them had a really unfortunate and, you know, thankfully he's recovering from it, surgery issue. One of them just was never able to repeat the performance. You know, relievers are volatile. You go out, you make those moves, and sometimes they don't work out. Now, you know, most of the time they kind of work out a little bit more evenly. Like, well, one may not be, you know, one may be kind of a bust, you know, and a different move will be more of a boom. I mean, and you can obviously say that going out and getting Gomez and then re-signing Gomez has been good for Texas.
Mm-hmm.
They've just had some bad luck. They've had some, you know, everything kind of clustering together and everybody performing poorly at once. Some of the young kids that were supposed to take a step forward this year didn't. So going into next year, you know, they're going to kind of be in the same place. They'll probably have the pieces. I can't see them going through the offseason standing pat. There's always the rumors that they're saving up all of their cap money to kind of throw at Shohei Ohtani, which of course changes the whole calculus. If they're sitting there planning to go get Ohtani, and then they're going to be able to keep Darvish and have Ohtani on there as well, then that, you know, that really changes kind of the way that you have to look at 2018 for Texas.
Sure.
But even without Ohtani, even if New York, who just traded for that international cap money and has also traded in another deal for more cap money. So that's kind of the warning signs of a team looking seriously at Ohtani.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if New York gets Ohtani, then Texas is still in this position where they need pitching. That is a thing that they need. It's always needed pitching.
Right.
you know, it's one of those things where you can ask a long-time Rangers fan, you know, what's always been the position of frustration for Texas, and it's pitching. But they still got these young kids. You know, they've still got Ruth Nader, they've still got Nomar Mazara, they've got Joey Gallo, they've got Ronald Guzman waiting in the wings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've got, they have some big bats, they have some solid defenders, they have some special talent still out there. I mean, and since they didn't move Beltre either, they still have Adrian Beltre for 2018. And
which
so,
is invaluable, apparently.
Oh, yeah.
Adrian Beltre is as talked about over the last few days as any player in my short tenure, you know, covering baseball. Like, the having Beltre is just wonderful on so many levels, but you know, you can't overlook the fact that he's still really good. I mean, he's a very, very good player when he's healthy.
He's still very good, and he's a mentor. You know, he's a natural mentor, and when you have a clubhouse full of these young guys, that's the kind of player you want. And Texas has a bunch of young guys.
Yeah, I did want to. You mentioned young guys who weren't developing as quickly, perhaps, as they had hoped they would. I felt like that was like a direct subtweet at Nomar Mazara, because I feel like everybody
I wouldn't say subtweet. Ruth Nader Tor hasn't exactly developed the way he was supposed, you know, expected to either.
Right.
You know, development is, it's not a straight line. This is the thing about covering prospects, about evaluating, is it's not a straight line. It's never been a straight line. It is, you know, it's bumpy, and sometimes guys are down and there's no real, you know, reason for it. Sometimes guys are up and you're like, oh, well, I guess this guy is just better now.
Right.
So it's, you know, it's not an absolute disaster that they're not quite there. And it's definitely far from time to think about, you know, oh, well, maybe it's time to give up on them. I mean, absolutely not. They're still, you know, incredibly young. I mean, think about it. Players, you know, we talk about, you know, baseball players' prime, and that prime isn't even, you know, supposed to be until they're age 27.
Right. No, absolutely. The reason I was actually trying to bring up Mazara was because if you look at him, and, you know, I'm no scout, and I'm certainly no young talent evaluator the same way you might, but when I look at Mazara at bat and in the field, he looks to me like a guy who still has all the tools to be incredibly successful. And so I feel like it seems like it might be a timing thing for him, where, you know, we're so used to seeing guys like Aaron Judge come up or Mike Trout come up, and like within 100 plate appearances they're superstars. And there's so many guys who come up and it takes them 1,000 plate appearances to become a superstar or a good regular or an average player. And Mazar's probably average.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we were just talking about Adrian Beltre. I mean, the obvious answer for a guy that came up and was really hot and then cooled down and then had a bunch of questions around him and then has, you know, really matured into an overall excellent player is Beltre.
Yeah,
so,
for sure.
You know.
So I got to break in real quick. Ken Rosenthal has just reported Yu Darvish has been traded.
What?
Wow. I love the deadline, because you get these reports so late in the game after the deadline. So we've got you for another 2 minutes. This is wonderful. And Ken Rosenthal, all he's telling us is that Darvish is traded. Not where, not what's coming back, nothing else.
Yeah, my timeline is I'm checking Twitter right now. My timeline is full of a bunch of to where, to whom, for what.
Oh my gosh!
You know,
so
it's all of the W's and the how.
My gosh!
I mean, Joaquin Bendoit just got hugs. So
wow, that was Sean. We got to talk to you about your pronunciation of some of these names, man. I'm sorry. Really? We're gonna have a conversation offline about Joaquin Benoit, but I do want to, before we have to drop, Kate. Unfortunately, the timing for this is really bad. I hope you're willing to come on maybe later, and we can talk about this once we get some details about Darvish and maybe talk about this further. I wish I had, like, you know, 15 more minutes with you. But before we let you go, can you plug anything that's important to you? You're writing anything that you're doing soon before we have to drop?
Yeah, I'm over at FanRag Sports as well as at BP, and over at FanRag, I actually just published yesterday a piece I'm really happy with about Adrian Peltre and about how, you know, about his journey as a player and where he is now. And then actually next weekend, I will be doing a presentation with Jeff Long of Baseball Prospectus at Sabre Seminar on pitch tunnels. So that will be exciting. We're planning on putting up at least a slideshow for that online. So you can check my Twitter for that. And I'm excited to see anybody who will be at Sabre Seminar at Sabre Seminar.
I think, unless I'm mistaken, that presentation's on Sunday, right?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so good news for you. Sean will be there and at that presentation, or producer. I will be there and at that presentation because that is going to be something that we don't want to miss. That should be a lot of fun. So I'm really looking forward to that.
I am excited and just a little bit nervous.
Join the club. This is Sean's first presentation at Sabre Seminar. It's my first presentation at Sabre Seminar. We can empathize. My slides are making me nervous, but thank you so much for joining, and I look forward to talking with you again as we find out more. Darvish to the Dodgers, so that's what we'll leave you with.
Yes, Darvish to the Dodgers. All right, thank you, guys.
So, Sean, thank you for jumping in with that last-minute knowledge about the deal. It's past the deadline, and so now it's time to bring on our final guest of the show. Sean, take it away.
So Aaron Gleeman is going to join us to wrap up the show. And a couple of late moves. We have, like you said, Darvish to the Dodgers, Braden Kinstler to the Nationals for Tyler Watson, Joaquin Benoit to the Pirates. And I believe that is it. Tony Cingrani to the Dodgers as well. I mean, that's probably the biggest move of the day. But we have Aaron Gleeman joining us now.
Aaron, thanks so much for joining us. Aaron, as our listeners to the show must know, the editor-in-chief of Baseball Prospectus. Aaron, thanks so much for coming on.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
So, breaking news, Brandon Kinstler,
yes,
off to the Nationals. As a Twins guy, you've got to be feeling really great about this, right?
Yeah, this is what we should be talking about right now at this exact moment, right? After you dumped Kate to not talk about Darvish and do some hot Brandon Kinstler takes. Yeah, I don't know. It was we can talk about Darvish, but I think actually the bigger news Twins wise is that they didn't trade Ervin Santana. They also didn't trade Brian Dozier, but I think there really hasn't been any steam for Dozier at all, just because he only plays second base and it's hard to even find a contender that would need him enough to give up a lot. But yeah, Santana stays, but he's got a year or maybe 2 years, even if they pick up the option of team control, so they can trade him later. But yeah, Brandon Kinstler, I wonder if he'll be the sort of, proven closer and slide the other Nationals acquisitions into setup roles.
That would be pretty interesting. It's amazing to see how quickly Kinstler has gone from afterthought to reliever that people actually want, right?
Yeah. I mean, he wasn't even on the opening day roster for the Twins last year. And, as people who've watched the Twins know, they've had some really bad bullpens. So that doesn't say a lot, but he had been coming back from some injuries and they signed him to a minor league deal. And then he started off, I think in May of last year in a middle relief role. And then before long he was closing him. He's been great. I think he's converted, 88% of the save chances, and he's got a ERA under 3, tons of ground balls, but I mean, he's not, On a good team, on a contending team, I would say he's probably, your seventh inning guy, and you'd feel pretty good about it. But depending, with Dusty Baker, I'm sure wanting a proven closer more than most managers, at least, it wouldn't shock me if they just put him in the ninth inning and said, we don't really have to worry about that, and then we can mix and match with the other guys. And while that's maybe sort of a misguided way to view it, they might be better off using the other guys as more fireman roles.
Sure. That's a possibility. I want to get briefly back to Santana before I guess we can talk about, Darvish and Gray and all that good stuff. But I do want to talk a little bit about Santana, because Santana, I was a little surprised they didn't move him too. But at the same time, you do think the Twins are looking to compete, if not, be the favorites in the Central in 2018. And Santana really does have kind of a role on that rotation as kind of I really, he's the anchor of that rotation. I mean, for all you want to talk about the young pitchers coming up on the Twin side, he is kind of the bulwark of that rotation still.
Yeah, and I think if he were – basically the Twins made two trades, and they were both impending free agents. Jaime Garcia, who was around for 6 days, and then Kinsler. I think if Santana was an impending free agent, and maybe even if he only had one more year under contract, it would have been much more likely that he'd be moved. But like you said, if they were to trade Santana, they'd go into the offseason saying, what's our biggest need? Well, our biggest need is a veteran number two starter, probably, something like that. And they have him signed next year for $13 million, and then they have a team option, I think, for $14 million, something like that, for 2019. The danger is he hasn't pitched all that well of late, and he's 34. So it's a, maybe sell high situation. But, yeah, they were definitely in a situation where they didn't need to sell just to sell with Santana.
Right, and probably in the same case with Dozier, too. Though Dozier, is one of those guys whose the contract is not really so much of an issue. He, just, what are you going to do? You're not going to trade him to the Astros. Astros don't need him. Other teams really don't tend to need a second baseman too frequently, especially a guy who's kind of locked into that position. So I don't know. It's a little, it might be anticlimactic, but it's also, it doesn't feel like the Twins made a mistake anywhere to me. I don't know what your opinion would be on that.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, if you can get a high-end prospect for Irvin Santana, I think you do it, especially if it's a, double-A or higher pitching prospect. But I'm going to assume they couldn't have done that because there were plenty of reports that they were willing to trade Santana. And then, like you said, with Dozier, I mean, it's very difficult. He has value in that he's an up-the-middle defender, but he can't play shortstop. He's never played third. He can't play center field. And if you move him to left field or right field, his bat is nothing special there. So it's a weird sort of defensive value, but no real versatility. And if you go up and down all.
Hey, Aaron, we're having a little bit of difficulty hearing you right now. Sean, can you jump in for a second? Are you having the same technical difficulties I am?
Yeah, it sounds like a connection thing. But another trade was so waiting on the Dodgers move to come out. Tim Beckham to the Orioles. And I believe Scott Van Slyke and another player to the Reds for Tony Cingrani. So trade's still coming out.
let's check back in. Aaron, are you still there?
Can you hear me? Hello?
Yes, you're back now.
Okay.
Sorry about the to cut you off during your discussion of Dozier. Let's go ahead and we'll switch over to the Dodgers a little bit because I really want to hear your thoughts on the three moves that they seem to have made. They've got Tony Cingrani and Tony Watson coming in. So, big on Tonys who throw from the left side, and then Yu Darvish. So, what do you want to make of the Dodgers move so far, not really knowing what the return is as of yet for these guys?
I mean, it's interesting. To me, they were the most obvious Darvish destination, and we'll see what they ended up giving up. But particularly with Kershaw, more of a question mark now. But, I mean, the teams that you would have thought would go heavy on Darvish are the ones that are guaranteed to play a full playoff series rather than just a wild card game. And so you can, give up quite a bit for him knowing he'll start more than one time for you and you'll have, you won't just be playing a coin flip game with him. So I think, Houston would have made sense. The Dodgers obviously make sense. The bullpen moves are interesting because clearly they wanted a lefty out of the bullpen. And I think that makes sense, but it sure seems like whether it was Britton or somebody else that they went after that they just decided for whatever reason, we're not going to pay that price. And these are, bargain bin, especially compared to Britton, but I mean, potentially useful. And really they have enough overall bullpen depth that you don't need like a shutdown setup lefty. I think you just need a guy that you're confident can get, two key outs in the seventh inning or something like that.
Yeah, it's just really interesting to me because I do think that Dodgers have this thing for left-handed pitchers. Like, you see so many of them in their rotation. You see that they really made a concerted effort to bring in some more lefties into their bullpen, even though, just like you said, their bullpen's been okay. Like, there hasn't really been a need for them to really ramp up there if you wanted to go out and get an impact guy like Britton. Or I've always been a big Tony Cingrani guy, and Watson was the closer, at least for the Pirates, whatever that's worth. I'm just kind of surprised that it seems like they target left-handed pitchers a little differently than other teams do, which is kind of neat.
Yeah, and I also wonder, I'd have to look further, but I also wonder how many of their righty relievers have either a reverse split or they're at least confident enough in them getting out lefties. Obviously, Kenley Jansen, they're not going to worry about that. And when you shrink the bullpen, maybe in the playoffs, they may have just decided it's not worth, breaking the prospect bank to get a lefty who's going to be, you know, third on the pecking order for the bullpen, but that's it certainly leaves them open. When you go out and get Darvish and you're on pace to win, like, you know, 140 games or whatever they're on pace for, and the only bullpen pickups are the two guys they got, which potentially useful but not sure thing impact guys, it does leave open the possibility for criticism. I mean, before they swung the Darvish move, our good friend Craig Goldstein was already complaining on Twitter that those are the only two moves they made. So,
well, it's good that anytime Craig can get a little comeuppance, I think we all are the better for it. So that's
agreed.
Good. So it's been like, so now we have our deadline. We don't have the exact returns for all of the last minute moves that we've heard about, but how do you feel like kind of as a whole, the deadline went and the weeks leading up to it? To me, it seemed like there was a lot of action earlier in the period. And then today was, I was on pace to be a little bit maybe anticlimactic, but we got the Sonny Gray trade. We got the Yu Darvish trade. We got some other minor moves. What do you think about the deadline this year? Is 2017 one that is kind of memorable or maybe kind of not so memorable?
I mean, I think there were a lot of significant moves. It seemed maybe more than previous years, which, you know, there were at least two or three big moves today, but there were also, for basically the past 10 days, there were every couple of days, there was at least some significant move. I think, you know, it's not one of the craziest deadlines, but it was definitely not a slow deadline. And I think I don't know, to me, and I'm only going by, you know, what our great prospect team at BP says about prospects, but it did seem like the returns, a lot of guys varied much more than I expected. And we saw, I know you talked to Jeffrey about it earlier, that a whole bunch of just sort of double A, triple A random middle relievers were traded. And then in some cases there were actually impact guys traded. So, you know, and then if you go back even further to the off season, there were even more impact guys traded. So yeah, it's been interesting to keep tabs on it. I think it's probably a slightly above average in terms of overall talent moved, but that's just my, you know, gut reaction to it.
Yeah, I mean, how often do you hear, like, you know, with between Quintana, Gray, and Darvish, that's about as good of a pitching, like, lineup of premium starting pitchers to move in a deadline. I can't imagine how you can do too much better than that. So that's kind of interesting in itself. So I will ask the really hard, really terrible projection question of you, that so now we know more or less what kind of deals have been made. Do you want to take a crack at predicting how the rest of the season and the playoffs are going to turn out, or do you want to try to pass on that?
Oh boy. I mean, I feel like, and maybe this is just silly, I feel like it would be such a cop out to just say that the Dodgers are going to play the Astros in the World Series. But the other, I mean, I watched last night Dodgers game, and I said they really have like an 0-1 Mariners feel to them, and that they just will not lose. Except on the flip side to that is the 0-1 Mariners did lose to the Yankees. So there weren't a ton of moves that would really make me alter my overall view of teams in general. Mm-hmm. The Darvish one is obviously has the biggest potential to do that, particularly because, I mean, if Kershaw comes back and is great down the stretch, then you have a crazy, you know, front of the rotation with those two and Alex Wood. But if Kershaw's out, then they've sort of at least gained some high-end insurance for that. And if they hadn't traded for Darvish and Kershaw isn't able to come back, well, then you're saying, did we waste, you know, an amazing regular season? So I guess the Darvish thing makes me more confident that the Dodgers are – obviously they're for real, but that the Dodgers are – you know, before we hear what the full story is with Kershaw, I still feel pretty confident that they're the best team.
Yeah, I for me, the only thing that the deadline really changed for me, I do think the Dodgers are even better, but the Dodgers were the best team in the world for the last, you know, month or two, so that doesn't shock me or anything like that, and I don't think it moves the needle too much for me. The one team that I think I would say surprised me the most maybe might be the Brewers. I was kind of thinking that they would do something more substantial than bringing in like Anthony Swarzak and Jeremy Jeffress, who are even with a lot of relief pitchers moving this offseason, they're not the most interesting ones for sure. So I was kind of surprised that they were a little less active than I expected them to be. I'm not even sure that's a bad decision, because this Brewers team is supposed to be contending for the next several years, not just this year. But I do think that makes the NL Central even more kind of the Cubs to lose at this point. And I don't know if that seems to be the only one that really kind of moves the needle for me, as opposed to, well, maybe this team isn't going to make the playoffs at all, and maybe won't be that much of a contender this year. Maybe we'll have to wait another year.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the Brewers were in a tough spot, and it's interesting because once they get overtaken by the Cubs, obviously it's going to be very hard to then re-chase down the Cubs, because the Cubs are playing extremely well. And I think everyone would agree, obviously, on paper, they're just the superior team. Anything can happen. But the problem then is, if you don't chase down the Cubs, they're like 5 or 6 games back of a wild card spot, just because the NL West is so insane right now. So there's no real fallback plan, as there is, you know, if the Royals aren't able to chase down the Indians, they can fall back into the wild card in the AL. And the same thing with the Yankees or the Red Sox, whatever. And so that it puts the Brewers in a tough spot. And I agree that, you know, obviously they would have liked to make some additions and make the playoffs ahead of schedule and maybe make a run. But if teams are asking for the very young building blocks that they just acquired and felt so good about in their rebuilding process anyway, I think it would have been crazy for them where they are today to give up a ton of value.
Yeah, trading Lewis Brinson for Sonny Gray or something like that, it doesn't seem like a David Stearns move. It doesn't seem like it would be a more short-sighted move. And God forbid it was somebody like Darvish, who would be a two-month rental. That just doesn't seem like it would be a fit. So with you 100% on that. So we're going to call it a show. I wish we would get our answers on who's going to Los Angeles for you, Darvish, but the only thing we've heard so far is that Alex Verdugo is not part of the deal. So
I have a Jerry Krasnick of ESPN says that Willie Calhoun is one of the pieces going to the Rangers.
Okay, so Calhoun is a quality prospect. People are very excited about him. It's a solid hit tool. And for much more information on that, you'll certainly be able to check out the transaction analysis, because we'll have a full write-up on him, I'm sure, at the site soon. But Aaron, do you want to give us a couple of quick plugs for things beyond Baseball Prospectus, or things at Baseball Prospectus you want to talk about briefly before we end the show?
I have nothing beyond Baseball Prospectus. I would say just read Baseball Prospectus tomorrow and forever, but especially today and tomorrow, because Brian, he's not going to want to take this compliment, but has done a great job behind the scenes coordinating the many moving parts involved in trying to have coverage of a billion trades and transactions. And I've been really pleased with the quality and the consistency of what we turned out. And obviously we have about, you know, a dozen more moves to post yet today and tomorrow. So yeah, everyone give props to Brian and read all the good work our prospect team is doing and the transaction analysis crew is doing today and tomorrow on Baseball Prospectus.
Yeah, I very much appreciate that, Aaron. I do agree with you, though I will not take that compliment. There's a lot of other people who are doing great work there, but I do appreciate you saying that. We'll go ahead and close out the show, but you can find out more information about the DFA podcast on our Twitter feed, which is at DFA podcast. You can always find us on Baseball Prospectus. You can find Sean over at Beyond the Box Score and at Baseball Prospectus Mets, the Mets local site. And again, Aaron, you will always be able to find at Baseball Prospectus, where he does the yeoman's work of trying to wrangle all of the crazy staff here at the site. So on behalf of myself and Sean, thank you so much for listening to our first live show. We will be back with more transaction analysis later on in the week. Have a good one.